John Colescott of Closed End Fund Advisors is here, and we're reviewing 2022 in Closed End Funds now on The Navigator. This is The Navigator, where we talk about all-weather active investing and plotting a course to financial success with the help of Closed End Funds. The Navigator is brought to you by the Active Investment Company Alliance, a unique industry organization that represents all facets of the closed-end fund industry, from users and investors to fund sponsors and creators. If you're looking for excellence beyond indexing, the Navigator's going to point you in the right direction. Joining me today, John Colescott, Chief Investment Officer at Closed End Fund Advisors in Richmond, Virginia, which has online information at cefadvisors.com. And if you want to dig into the firm's research and data, well, that would be cefdata.com. John is also Chairman of the Active Investment Company Alliance, which you can learn about at AICAlliance.org. John Colescott, happy holidays. Welcome back to The Navigator.
It's always fun being with you, Chuck.
Happy holidays. And next week we'll be saying Happy New Year, but it hasn't been a happy this year necessarily for investors. A year ago, you and I were looking ahead. So let's take a look back right now at 2022, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Sure. So a year ago, there were 505 closed-end funds, and that number is now down to 498. Now, a year ago, 76% of the funds were levered. That's nudged slightly to 77. And the leverage figures have gone from 29% on average up to 31.4. The average closed-end fund per our 15-sector index is down about 18% year-to-date. But I do want to note the non-listed segment of our universe, the interval funds, are only down on average 2.5%. So definitely a better experience for those investors this year. A year ago, there was way more premiums. A third of the funds were premiums. Now it's only 14%. And the dividend growth rate, not horrible, but it was down 6.3% on a one-year basis. And if you exclude munis and preferreds, where there's typically the largest cuts, it's only down 3%. And discounts widened 9%. And a year ago, the indicated yields were 6.6%. And now, even with dividend cuts on average, the indicated yields are 8.6%.
That's the basic industry stats. What about how investments performed?
Got it. So munis, again, one-year performance, market price negative 25 on a total return basis, 16 on NAV. Again, a significant discount widening. We talked about this last year as a risk. Preferreds a little better because of lower duration, negative 20 versus NAV of negative 13. Kind of the outlier, which we hoped for, but we didn't know why. MLP funds up 26%. And what's crazy is that NAVs were up almost 24%. So barely any discount narrowing in the large gains there. And almost the inverse, REIT and real asset funds were down 25%, but the NAVs were down 25%. So basically no discount moves in the carnage in that sector. And we always love talking about senior loan funds and high yield because there's a lot of options and a lot of good managers in the closed-end fund space, and they tend to perform differently. Senior loans were down 14% market price and only 6 on NAV, and high yield was down 17 on market price and 13 on NAV. And you can't forget about BDCs, they're the closed-end fund cousins. They were only down 7% year to date, 14% widening, but they had 10% average dividend growth because, as you may know from our sessions together, highly fixed levered, highly variable loans, very focused on dividends to investors.
Now we have a look back on how the funds themselves were doing. Let's put you to the test because a year ago, you and I sat here, did this. We talked about a couple things you expected. For example, you were really focused on duration risk.
I was. So we really were thoughtful. We were overweighting preferreds, underweighting munis, overweighting, again, the senior loans, MLP. We really built our client portfolios for duration risk and leverage cost increases. We had no idea what was coming, but we were definitely correct with both duration risk being a problem for 22 and increased leverage cost. We thought that activism would go down because, you know, there'd be less discounts and less problems. And I wouldn't say it's down. It's actually differently stable, as in there's still lots of building shares by the known activist investors that I believe will be more impactful to the proxy battle season next year. So definitely wasn't quite correct on activism. IPOs, I had the audacious thought that we could get more than one a month. and we ended up with only four. After February, the IPO window basically closed. BlackRock got a small target term muni out at the end of the year, kind of limping the IPO market back to health. But there were two direct listings, one very small and $1 billion and change dollar fund that's kind of unique to see such a large fund direct listed from a non-listed fund to a listed. So I was wrong there. But then BDCs, I said we'd have two or three come out. And we had two listed, but they weren't large. And we had three huge growth in the non-listed. So if you allow me to correct myself and say non-listed BDCs, I was basically correct.
You know, the interesting thing, for example, the IPOs, I don't know that your forecast would have been wrong if it weren't for the way the market turned out. This is that, how do you do a forecast, right? When people were looking at the year ahead, nobody was necessarily thinking great things for 2022. The problem was the market peaked on the first day of the year, and no matter what it did afterwards, it was down. And that took all the companies out of the IPO space. It probably took most of the starch out of BDCs, although again, you can kind of wordsmith your way to being correct on that one. But yeah, that was part of the year that you make the forecast and then just the market action. Had we had a year that was more choppy but wasn't so down, that one might have been right.
And I would say the biggest surprise that wasn't directly tied to the market surprise was that non-listed structures had a banner year of giving investors options that did not blow up their portfolio on average.
You also, when you were forecasting for 2022, looked at a couple of specific funds. Let's talk about those.
Yeah, so last year we looked at the MLP fund EMO, the preferred fund PTA, the REIT real asset PGZ, the loan high yield fund ARDC, and the BDC GBDC. That's a lot of ticker symbol mouthful. But basically, as we reviewed on a one-year basis, the market prices on average were only off 3.4% for the basket versus 16 negative for our index. The NAV was off just under 2 versus almost 12 for the index. And the discount's still 13 for the basket, and that's still 2.5% wider than the peer group average. But the dividends grew 15% this year. All five funds increased their dividend in the last 12 months, and they're showing an indicated yield still of 9.8. I'm not saying necessarily go buy this basket from a year ago, but it's not an unattractive basket, and it did what I hoped it would do, diversify dividends and not be a crater in the portfolio.
And while you're not saying to go buy it, there's one more message here for 2022. We will be back talking about your look ahead for 2023, but folks have a little bit of work to do between now and then, because although the five funds that you picked performed reasonably well, it wouldn't be hard to have things that you have losses on and you want a tax loss harvest, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's so amazing. So many investors think if you were to sell, you know, Nuveen Muni Bond A and buy Nuveen Muni Bond B, that's a wash sale. And that's not true. It's basically you can buy cousins and sisters, sell cousins and sisters, and it's not a problem. We argue, and again, we tend to work with larger portfolios because we're highly customized. But if you can grab those tax losses today, do it. Trades are basically free. And so you're able to swap and take those assets. So next April, your checking account will be bigger because you could either take gains somewhere else in the portfolio, maybe an MLP fund at a huge gain, you want to rotate, and you can either neutralize or you can grab an asset to reduce future tax liability. It's a simple way to have more money later, and closed-end funds are perfect for that opportunity.
And what you're also saying here is that functionally, pretty much everything you own in the closed-end fund space is not so unique that you can't replace it with something else, at least for 30 days. But I'm curious, A, is that true? And then B, when people are making these changes, are you moving from fund A to fund B and going back in 31 days so that you avoid the wash sale? Or if you said you're going from Nuveen A to Nuveen B, you just hang out in Nuveen B, see what happens, and maybe you go back to Nuveen A if ever you need another tax loss harvest.
So our client portfolios are highly customized for beta tolerance, duration tolerance, tax efficiency, discount tailwinds, and dollar denominated income per client. We'll take close investments for 31 days. We're probably far more likely to do a fresh review in 31 days and look for the opportunity to make that decision like it was fresh capital because we took the asset. I would argue we use like a 6 month NAV correlation analysis to pick swapping funds traditionally, because that will find some funds that you didn't realize were as close as they actually are. Sometimes some not the same fund sponsors, same sector. So the short answer is probably not a need for your audience, but I'd say for the financial advisors in your audience, a great value to offer a benefit to their clients who they're a fiduciary for.
And again, get your tax loss selling done between now and next week, when you and I will talk again and we will get a fresh set of forecasts and a fresh list of funds and more for 2023. John, happy holidays. I'm looking forward to the next conversation already.
Thanks so much, Chuck. See you next week.
The Navigator is a joint production of the Active Investment Company Alliance and Money Life with Chuck Jaffe. Yep, that's me. You can learn all about my work, my show, at moneylifeshow.com or wherever you get the good podcasts. To learn more about closed-end funds, interval funds, and business development companies, go to AICAlliance.org, the website for the Active Investment Company Alliance. They're on Facebook and LinkedIn at AIC Alliance. Thanks to my guest, John Cole Scott, Chief Investment Officer at Closed End Fund Advisors in Richmond, Virginia, and the Chairman of the Active Investment Company Alliance. His firm is online at CEF Advisors, and you can check out their research for yourself at cefdata.com. And John's on Twitter, too. He is at John Cole Scott. The Navigator podcast is available every Friday, and we will be back during the holidays next week with a look ahead to the new year. Make sure you don't miss that or any episode by following along on your favorite podcast app. Meanwhile, happy holidays, everybody, and happy investing.